Before us today, and that would be AB 131. If we have finance here, we'll have a presentation. And since we have floor at 10, this should not take too long. And for committee members who are within earshot and not yet present, we request your presence. Good morning. Who's going to present?
Good morning. Erica Lee with the Department of Finance. So the amendments to AB 131, which is the bill that was presented on the civil service improvement, are pursuant to two agreements that were reached just last week, actually between the state and the state scientists and the state engineers. So those are that's the reason before you for the amendments. And essentially, the major provisions include general salary increases for both units, increases in some travel reimbursements for three high-cost counties, some changes in pay differentials, and then, of course, we have some reforms to post-employment benefits. There were three that were included in both of those proposals.
Made some news a few weeks back.
A little bit of news, right? So those are significant for the administration. Those are the general changes. We'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Well, why don't we talk about the retiree health care benefits? What makes them so news-making?
Sure. Eric Stern with the Department of Finance. So the governor, as you probably recall, the governor in January made a big proposal about our retiree health care liabilities. We have about a $72 billion unfunded liability for retiree health care. So that represents our long-term obligation we have to provide health care for our retirees. And so the main components of the plan that we negotiated with the unions that we have agreements with involve starting to pre-fund those retiree health care costs, those future costs. So similar to what we do with pensions now, where employees and the employer make contributions, we put the money in a trust fund and let it grow investment income, and that helps pay for those benefits in the future. So what we established a funding plan, basically, to pay for what's known as the normal cost, which is sort of the seed money that needs to be contributed every single year into the trust fund so that money can grow over time and pay for future benefits. So we made an agreement with the labor unions to split that normal cost share. So the state will pay half that cost and the employees will pay the other half of that normal cost. And we'll deposit that money into a trust fund over at CalPERS. CalPERS will invest the money. It'll sit there for 20, 30 years, growing investment income until we start pulling it back and using that investment income to pay for the pay as you go cost that we'll continue to make. And then the other two components that we negotiated that are pretty significant is that
before you jump into those two, we're going to call the roll and establish our quorum.
Sure.
Thank you.
Leno?
Here.
Nielsen?
Here.
Allen?
Here.
Anderson? Bell?
Here.
Block? Hancock? Mitchell? Monning? Morlock? Nguyen, Pan, Pavley, Roth, Stone, Woke. Thank you.
We have our quorum. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. So we had some pretty important conversations we had at the table over the benefit levels, and we reached an agreement with our with the labor unions to change the state contribution for retiree health care benefits for new employees who start working for the state after January 1st, 2016, for those members who are part of those bargaining units. And so currently we provide a 100% contribution of a contribution that represents 100% of the average premiums that CalPERS offers. And so what we agreed to is to go to bump that down to 80% of the average premium cost.
So
the employer will pay 80% of that cost of the average premiums. Still a very generous benefit. Again, it would only apply to new employees hired after next year. And the other significant change was increasing our vesting schedule to qualify and be eligible for that benefit. So currently, employees are under a 10 to 20 year graduated vesting schedule, and we agreed to change that to 15 to 25 years.
So how does that affect the $72 billion?
So over a long period of time, if we are successful in getting similar types of agreements with all the other bargaining units as their contracts are up for renewal over the next two years, we should be able to eliminate the unfunded liability completely eliminated it in approximately 30 years. So the actuaries that we hired to model out these scenarios, for the which is pretty much the pre-funding, is where you really get the ability to erode the unfunded liability, because it's all pay-as-you-go costs now. Currently, we have about a $2 billion general fund spend on retiree health care. So over time, we'll continue to make that pay-as-you-go cost, which we anticipate will continue to increase, because we have to let those contributions sit in that trust fund. We have to let it take time to let it grow investment income. But over time, over 30 years, the actuaries model out that we should be able to erode the unfunded liability if we continue to keep this funding plan in place with everyone, all state employees, and the state making equal contributions into that trust fund.
So this is a comprehensive solution.
This is, but again, this only affects two bargaining units.
This is with the assumption that we're going to be able to replicate this.
Sure. Yeah. So bargaining units 9 and 10 represent about 6% of the total state workforce that's in our OPEB retiree health care plan.
This is for the scientists and for the engineers, right? One more question, then we'll get to Senator Roth. What are some of the larger bargaining units that will be before you that will help substantiate that this is going to be our model going forward?
Sure. So we're still negotiating with bargaining unit 6, which is CCPOA, the correctional officers. So that's a substantial portion of the state workforce. And then next year, the SEIU bargaining units are up, which is really the bulk of the state workforce. So next year is the big push.
And with regard to the expectation of the return on our investment, what do we have to continue to hit for this equation to continue
to
work?
So the portfolio that CalPERS invests in has a return that they assume about 7.3%. So it's a long-term assumption. Again, we think it's appropriate to model our plan using a long-term assumption, because we're not even intending to touch this money in the trust fund for 25, 30 years probably.
All right. Senator Roth, anyone else? Yes, and then Senator Pan.
Just one quick question. You use the word erode as opposed to eliminate, and maybe you meant that, maybe you mean the same thing. So if the administration is successful in negotiating similar provisions in all of the collective bargaining agreements as they become due, will the unfunded liability, is it projected to be eliminated?
Yes, yeah. It was just a word choice.
Oh.
So eliminate the unfunded liability. So the way it's going to work is, if you think about it, is just money going into a bank account, and the more every dollar of assets that you have, the unfunded liability is really just sort of an accounting metric on the books. So every dollar of assets is $1 less of unfunded liability. So if we start contributing a lot of money into this trust fund, over time, we'll be able to eliminate that unfunded liability.
Is another way to look at it that we continue to make this $2 billion investment, the problem continues to be less exacerbated each year?
Right, so exactly.
By just continuing the $2 billion, the problem.
Exactly.
I think erode actually was a good verb.
Right. So yeah. For example, if let's say we had $72 billion and we could write a check today to pay off the unfunded liability and it was gone, we'd immediately tomorrow start accruing a new unfunded liability, because we don't have a funding stream going into pay for our future retiree healthcare benefits. So we really need to set up a model that's very similar to how pensions work. And, you know, it's over a long period of time, the pension funding model is generally pretty good. You know, we have ups and downs. We're in sort of a down period now, but, you know, we're hoping that if we make a parallel sort of funding approach, we should be in good shape to really sustain this benefit structure for the long term, and that's really what we're looking at doing.
Good effort. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Pan, then Senator Nielsen, and Senator Morlock.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. As chair of the PERS committee, I appreciate the opportunity to review the MOUs for both the engineers and the scientists, and I want to thank the respective unions for their work with the Department of with the administration to come to this agreement, and certainly very supportive of the MOUs that are incorporated in this bill. I also just want to briefly also remark that as someone who has a science background, I know that here, as we've debated policy, we need to be competitive and be able to recruit scientists to help us do the work, to provide the technical support for the state government, and I appreciate what the administration, the scientists were able to come together, and same with our engineers, to try to be sure we remain competitive, because we've been in a situation where basically the private sector and the public sector and many levels of government have, and other levels of government have been more competitive than the state, and we need to be sure we can retain and recruit the technical people at the highest levels to be able to do the work of the state. So again, I want to express my support for both the bill and the MOUs. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And it should not go without saying that we appreciate each of these bargaining units working with the administration and working with us so that we can finally attend to a situation that needed resolution. It looks like we will have it. Senator Nielsen? Or if you like, Senator Borla, I can go first if you like.
No, that's okay.
All right.
Contracts are, I understand that you're just focusing on the negotiations, but it's very substantial future obligations, and one of the factors that we have to consider is, you know, in this budget, there are a lot of other priorities, and the employees are deserving, but it is noteworthy that we've got a lot of many other obligations. Do we have ledge analysts here today, Mr. Chairman? Anybody from ledge analysts?
Yes, we should have someone.
A little later, I'd like to maybe have them come up. Not now. But just a little bit later. The vesting. Go over that again with me.
Sure. So currently, most state employees currently have to work 10 years for the state before they qualify for a retiree health care contribution when they retire for the state's contribution. And so it's a graduated vesting schedule. So after 10 years, you get 50% of the contribution, and that ratchets up every year until over to 100% of the state's contribution after 20 years. So what we did is we extended that time frame. So now you have to work a minimum of 15 years to get half of the state's contribution, and at 25 years, you get the full state contribution. And so, you know, it's sort of a strategy to reward long-term employees, and we get some substantial savings in the long term. And again, it would only affect new employees hired after next year.
How about the annual leave buyout, the accrued annual leave? You know, that's been a long-standing issue. Are we taking some more decisive steps than we have in the past to curtail the tremendous buyout? Or shall I say retirement bonus?
So both proposals included an increase from the prior 20-minute, the cap was a 20-hour buyout to 80 hours. And we are attempting to address that unfunded liability by allowing departments to look at their budgets to see what they can afford to help reduce the long-term costs of those the hours that are on the books.
Okay. This is just another general observation that these individual contracts are okay, but as a legislature, we also have to pay a lot more attention in the budget to the PYs. In these very trying times, that's not an area that much progress has been made in reducing the number of personnel years or the numbers of percentage increase in hired employees. We need to pay attention. I may have another question in a minute, but I'll defer now to
Thank you. And just to underscore one of the answers given to Senator Nielsen, when you said we're changing the vesting schedule so that now it'll be 25 years before fully getting the 100% investment vesting from the employer's contribution, but that 100% is going to be 80% as opposed to the former 100% of 100%. So we're
exactly
pushing it out and lowering it, the employer, our state's liability. Senator Borlaug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're using a GASB 45 trust now. When was that established?
The trust fund was established over at CalPERS. It was maybe a decade ago, because there's a lot of local employers, about 400 local employers.
It's multi-employer.
It's a multi-employer trust over at CalPERS.
And then what does the state have as a balance?
We have about, I think at the end of at June 30th, 2014, it was close to $100 million, $90 million, somewhere in that range. So, which effectively means we have a 0% funded status.
Right.
And most of that is from, so we do have three bargaining units that have some pre-funding agreements in there that we've had for a few years now. So CHP, bargaining unit 5, we've been contributing, the state's been making contributions, and the employees have too for a few years now. So most of that is CHP related contributions.
So then we have it broken up by the various departments.
Right. Every bargaining unit has sort of a sub account to to track the dollars and the funded status and the liabilities associated with those members.
And so we're proposing to make those contributions by employees non-refundable?
Correct. That's the way the trust fund is established.
Why are we doing that?
It's the nature of how that trust fund is. It's an employer trust fund, so it's for it's sort of the rules and parameters of how that was created under IRS rules and regulations several years ago.
So why don't we as a state pay for it ourselves and not the employee as a strategy?
So, well, as the governor proposed back in January, we think this is a shared responsibility to deal with this issue in the long term, similar to what we did with pension reform, similar to what we did with the teachers' retirement system funding plan last year, is that retiree health care is fundamentally an employee benefit, and we think that we know from being at the bargaining table with our labor unions is that it's a benefit that they value and that they believe that it's worth putting aside money for as well.
So then we're giving them a raise so they can have a withholding, which means we're actually compounding our pension plan problem. So I'm just curious, if we said we'll pay your retiree medical, but we reduce your raise to make it 3% or 4%, then we don't create another problem, which is our defined benefit pension plan that just keeps growing.
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of interactions that go on with that, but I would say that the employee contribution is not directly correlated to the pay raises and the GSIs that they're giving. There's been a long period of pretty sort of stagnant salary growth. There's been with the scientists specifically, there was a lot of lag that's been going on that we've been trying to address. So it's not sort of a one for one sort of relationship between the OPEB contributions and the salary increases.
Right, but you know, when you grant someone a massive defined benefit pension plan, you had better be ready not to have pay raises for a long time,
right,
or it won't pencil out. So you got to pick. You want a big pension? Great. If you want a 401k, then great. We'll give you raises as long as we can afford. So we've created this mutual problem of the DB plan. So now when you give a 7% raise, and you're the state, and we've got counties and cities that can't afford to do that because of their various situations, you're creating a bar now that the reverberations are not going to be pleasant for a lot of local leaders because they can't afford to match that. So have you taken that into consideration at all?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, we know that there's pressure. It puts pressure on your pension contributions if you have sort of unanticipated end of career salary growth. But over the last 10 years, because salary growth actually has been pretty flat, we've been having a lot of actuarial gains on our contribution rates because the actuaries estimate that salaries should have been increasing every single year because they make long-term estimates. And so over the last decade, when we had a recession and pretty stagnant salary growth, we actually had a lot of actuarial gains. And I think the GSIs that we've agreed to really sort of reflect sort of a catch-up period when we've had low growth in wages for the state.
So we don't have actuarial reports. Are those available?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Today? Before we start and vote?
I mean, we can get them forwarded to the staff.
Because I'm having trouble understanding you have actuarial gains when you're 0% funded. So
on the pension side.
I'm talking about the retiree medical side. You know, do we have actuarial reports? Do we even know actuarially what we're going to save or what's it going to do to our unfunded liability? How come I don't have it in print? Do we have something?
We can get that forwarded to you. Yeah, we didn't make this up across the street up in our office over there.
Well, some of us like to read actuarial reports, believe it or not.
Yeah. That's good. No, Senator Moorlach, I'm familiar with your background on these issues, and happy to share those reports with you. Because, yeah, we contracted with the state's long-term contract actuaries that the controller's office uses for our GASB reports.
Who's that?
So it's a firm called Gabriel Roeder Smith out of Chicago. Okay. And they model all the scenarios for us and the funding plans and what the long-term impacts would be for making the vesting changes and the lower state contribution changes as well.
I would have attacked this a little differently. I would have probably had the state pay the withholding for the retired medical so that we don't increase the pension problem. So that's where I'm going to have some difficulties.
Sure.
But thank you for answering my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. We have a motion by Senator Bell. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Yes, Senator Nielsen.
I'd just like to get on the record so people don't ever forget this. A reform that was put in and now removed in 2015, that if agencies kept positions unfilled 6 months, they would lose those positions. That was removed last year. That was a very necessary control. It was fairly easy to manipulate it, but we could fix some of the manipulation of changing classifications, et cetera, that they exploited to get around that provision. But that's something that we're going to insist that we continue to revisit, that they have got to get rid of those positions. They'll lose them. That's just an automatic. So that's part of continuing discussions.
Senator Nielsen, you have my full support in that. I do have one question, Senator Morlock, then I'll have a question, and then we'll take our vote.
Okay. One of the questions I used to ask when I was running my own firm is, what do you do for an encore? So what happens with all the other bargaining units? Are they all going to come in and ask for 7%? Same. I mean, can we afford that? Have we looked at the reverberations, ramifications?
You know, we do have 15 bargaining units that are coming up next year. So we're currently in negotiations with two others. So we anticipate, you know, looking at each of those bargaining units uniquely to see what their particular issues are. And so we don't feel like we've established a template or anything in terms of salaries. But we are attempting to address each unit with their unique issues and concerns.
So it looks like, for, say, Caltrans, the costs are going to go up $600 million over the next 4 years. So we're trying to figure out how to find money to build roads, and I'm trying to figure out the connection here. And these negotiations are all done by the governor's office and Department of Finance?
It's actually the Department of Human Resources leading the negotiations.
And then we get the results?
We're right to the vote now.
At the last day here of session, is there any transparency prior to that on what's going on with the negotiations?
Negotiations are confidential between the state and the bargaining units. And then at the end, there is a tentative agreement that is signed by both sides and submitted to the Joint Legislative Budget Analyst as well as the LAO for analysis. And the law requires that there are public hearings and there's appropriation, that there's ratification by the legislature.
And has that been followed?
Yes.
To the letter?
Yes. I would say that is the process that has been in place and it's part of the DILS Act. For both bargaining units 9 and 10, communications, the notifications were sent to the Joint Legislative Budget Committee pursuant to signing. Those signatures were still wet on the page.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Morlock. Can you put in real numbers for us, the kinds of salaries we're talking about? My understanding is that, and I think I can speak a little more with more certainty with regard to the scientists than the engineers, but our scientists are paid very little relative to the private sector or city or counties. Can you give us some comparisons, please?
I don't have individual salaries, but I would say that, you know, when generally, the law requires that the Department of Human Resources put out a salary survey 6 months prior to the beginning of negotiations. So they do look at full compensation salaries as well as benefits, and they compare that with other government entities like the locals, the feds, and you are correct in stating that there was a significant lag in particularly the scientists when compared to their counterparts. So this salary survey is often used as a part of a tool that is looked at, some of the information that is looked at before going into negotiations.
But it's fair to say, in the comparison, we would trend toward the lower end of the scale rather than the higher.
The salary, the full compensation survey did show that with particularly the scientists.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Mitchell.
Thank you. Just a very quick follow-up on the salary survey question. Who actually does the survey? Is it a online? Do you contract out with a
firm?
It's
actually the Department of Human Resources conducts that. They have a salary survey unit that conducts that.
And is that available to any state entity? How does one request a salary survey be conducted?
In statute, it's the bargaining units that are up. Their contracts are up. Mm-hmm. Then that is something that would happen.
It's kind of autopilot.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Good questions. Senator Stone, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Yes. Sorry I was late.
No.
Sorry.
Mr. Ask away.
Is there a representative of the LAO here today?
I think we're ready for you, sir.
First of all, I want to say that I think the bill has many supportable issues. Certainly helping to reform the retiree healthcare system, I think, is a very important thing. I would never make the comment that we should take anything away from existing retirees. However, the retiree exposure for the state of California, even moving prospectively and offering lifetime benefits, is a tremendous liability for the state, much more generous than in the private sector. While this is a good attempt to start minimizing that exposure, do you see any time in the future, and I'll get to the LAO in just a second, do you see any time in the future when we really match the private sector in not offering this very generous benefit, especially at a time when we have Obamacare that's supposed to be taking a lot of this responsibility over, and we need to, not necessarily as a part of this discussion, but in the future, we have got to address this mounting liability that takes away our discretionary funds to do things like early childhood education, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in real quickly just because we're late for the floor. We've gone over all this, and I'm just going to try and do it in shorthand.
Okay.
We were told that we do have a $72 billion unfunded liability for retiree health care costs currently, that with the reform in these two bargaining units, with the expectation it will be replicated throughout all of the upcoming negotiations with the other bargaining units, that we will have resolved finally with this proposal within 30 years the entire $72 billion situation.
Okay, I appreciate it. I'd like to see those actuarials if you have them, and I'd like to see the LAO's comparison as well. So, you know, I think the 800-pound gorilla sitting in the room is that the LA's report basically says that they believe that we have 3,000 employees sitting in Caltrans that aren't necessary. And here we're talking about giving raises to people that aren't necessary, and we're also talking about raising $3 to $6 billion in taxes to pay for infrastructure. Are you still stand by that analysis, number one? And number two, I believe through Ms. Spears' legislation in the past that you require a certain amount of time to go over these things, especially MOUs, and I want to applaud you for coming forward in a very short period of time with an analysis, but is your analysis as comprehensive as you would expect it to have been had you had the full 10 days to do it?
Nick Schroeder with the LAO. I'll address the 10-day review question, and then my colleague will address the Caltrans question. As we indicated in our analysis, especially with a policy as complex as retiree health care, 10 days isn't enough to do the analysis, and honestly, we probably would need many months to do an analysis of it. And so that's why we were able to expedite our review and basically acknowledge that we can't do an analysis of the OPEB retiree health policy within the time period.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your efforts to at least bring us something.
Jessica Peters with the Analyst Office. In regard to your question, I think you're referring to our May 2014 report on the Capital Outlay Support Program review. At that time, we found that the department was overstaffed for its capital outlay support staff by roughly 3,500 positions. Some reductions have been taken since that time, and so it's down to roughly maybe 3,300 positions.
Okay, so it's fair to say that your analysis shows that we have 3,000 more employees working in Caltrans than are presently needed.
That's what the analysis would indicate, yes.
Okay. So that's a major concern. We're not only funding positions that the LAO feels are not necessary, and by the way, you're a nonpartisan analysis, and I appreciate that, but we're also considering raises for people that aren't even needed that could shift $500 million into building streets and roads, which we're asking our citizens to step up the plate and pay more taxes for. I appreciate your answer. I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. We've had discussions. I'm not sure how much you are here for them. To make a definitive comment, these are raises that are not even needed. I don't think quite fits the context of what we've been discussing. If we don't have any other questions or comments, don't want to overlook anybody. We have a motion. If you call the roll, please.
Leno?
Aye.
Leno, aye. Nielsen?
No.
Nielsen, no. Ellen?
Aye.
Ellen, aye. Anderson?
No.
Anderson, no. Bell?
Aye.
Bell, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hancock?
Aye.
Hancock, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Morlock?
No.
Morlock, no. Wynn?
No.
Wynn, no. Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. Pavley?
Aye.
Pavley, aye. Roth?
Aye.
Roth, aye. Stone?
No.
Stone, no. Woke?
Aye.
Woke, aye. 11-5.
The measure passes. That's the only item before us today. We stand adjourned. Thank you.